Universität Hamburg.
After having heard so much about this year's winner of the Hamburg Prize for Theoretical Physics, it's of course high time that we welcome him up here on the stage. Please join me, Professor Green. We have a third thing is you probably have to get your recording device or your microphone on. It's just make sure you press the mute button or unmute it, right? So we have roughly 5 minutes left. Should we place ourselves here? Yeah, that's an A. Come over here. It's way better. We have roughly 5 minutes left to talk a little bit about you and your work and how this all came about. The first question I would like to ask you is, if you look at your CV, you basically spent the last 25 years in small students towns, Boulder, Colorado, really a nice place to be. West Lafayette now, also rather a students town. So these people here, giving you this prize, expect you to move to Hamburg at least for a while. So is it a challenge for you to move to such a big city?
Now I can say that. I have lived in big cities. I had my graduate work in Chicago, and did postdoc work in the Bay Area. And so this is not really going to push the outside of the envelope for me. I think I can find a way to coexist with the massive number of humans in this city.
That's good to hear, but did they also tell you that the weather here is much worse than it is in Boulder? I read that 300 sunny days in Boulder every year, it's only a fraction in Hamburg, I'm afraid to say.
But now I live in Indiana. So
it's worth it. Okay. So I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, I'm sure everybody's more than happy to welcome you here. The interesting thing, if you look at your CV again, is that you already have pretty strong ties to Germany. And if I'm right, it more or less started all, at least most of it, in 2007, when you spent 6 months in Heidelberg, which was made possible by an award from the Humboldt Foundation back then. Was that sort of the beginning of your strong ties to Germany?
Absolutely. I've been to many conferences over the years. I think my first trip to Germany was in 1983 to Münster and Berlin conferences. But the first time I really stayed and worked and researched was this great Humboldt Award. It's an incredible foundation, that the way they stimulate research. It's really beautiful, and it brought me here.
But there's more to the story. You also have German ancestors, but now you also have a German wife, right?
Yeah, that was one of the things I collected on my stay, and which was really nice that I could convince her to join the team. And I have ancestors going back to the 1850s, a professor, a great-great-grandfather was a professor in Marburg, and they liked him so much they put him in prison. He had to escape and get to the U.S. where he could live and not be killed.
Let's briefly talk about your work. We've already heard that you're a brilliant theoretical physicist. So how did this come about? I'm asking because the most prominent theoretical physicist of this year is probably Professor Peter Higgs, who just won the Nobel Prize. And he was once making very clear that his fingers are all thumbs. So he basically stick to paper and pen because he was no good at experimental work at all. Did you have similar thoughts when you were pondering your career options?
Well, I did work as an experimentalist when I was an undergraduate at Nebraska, actually. I enjoyed that, but it was when I saw the beauty of quantum mechanics, I was really drawn into the subject and thought it was just so incredible. I mean, here's a theory that's too weird to be on Monty Python, but it's true. To have this deep truth to be so strange and interesting mathematics, it really had me hooked.
You've already received numerous prizes. Nobody has talked about that, but there's quite an impressive list, actually. So the one you're getting here today now, the Hamburg Prize for Theoretical Physics, is for a novel form of bound matter, which basically doesn't exist anywhere in nature, at least not under, let's say, rather normal conditions, right? Back in the year 2000, when you wrote this paper together with two colleagues, and one of them is actually here, I think, did you back then realize how important this work is going to be?
It didn't really strike me as important. It wasn't the sort of thing you write when you propose for a grant and you have to predict your discoveries for the next 10 years. It was just, wow, here's something kind of interesting. I didn't expect that. Let's look into this a little more deeply. And then you get talking with someone like Hossein Sarugapur and the late Alan Dickinson, and it sort of snowballs, and you see it's just a fun project. And no, certainly it didn't seem particularly important, but it was really intriguing, and it's kind of fun to see it catch the imagination of others and now actually be realized by amazing experimentalists like Tillman Pfau.
So how important for a theoretical physicist is it actually some experimental guy is there to say it really exists? So Peter Higgs had to wait for 50 years, you had to wait for 8 years. What did you think when you heard from the University of Stuttgart that we've actually found the thing you've predicted to exist?
Well, actually, I was slightly nervous when this textbook cover appeared. You know, I was thinking, okay, they really seem to think this theory is right. it better be right. you know, I hope we didn't leave out any important physics in this. So it was a bit of a relief, I will admit. But we have a lot of confidence in our equations, and I had a great training from Ugo Fano and the heritage of Enrico Fermi that we were standing on, and gave me quite a bit of confidence that even if it had to be modified to some extent, the basic idea, that physics had to be there. I was pretty confident even before the experiment. Sorry, Tillman.
My favorite quote from Peter Higgs was, after the discovery of the Higgs particle at CERN, of course, it's nice to be right sometimes. So you would agree to that?
I do like being right.
standard questions journalists like to ask, they always wonder, is there any applications you could think of in the future? What is your answer? Is it just like basic fundamental science and nobody knows where it's going to lead to? Or do you see any practical use of that?
Well, if you really take a stretch, you can imagine, you know, that these are manipulatable, if that's a word, I'm not sure, by very tiny electric fields. And, you know, to be able to control the flow of information and matter with unbelievably small fields. Of course, it's a challenge to control the fields that well, but you could imagine it could have some implications, but I wouldn't bet the family farm on it.
How important is scientific exchange for you? So you can imagine most of your work is basically done by using your laptop computer and running simulations, of course. But then again, back in Boulder, where you spent 23 years, a long time, you were sitting right next to Eric Cornell, Nobel Prize in 2001 for Bose-Einstein condensation. You were also sitting right next to David Wineland at NIST, which is just across the street, basically, as far as I remember, Nobel Prize last year for fundamental works in quantum physics. So how important is it for you to have such brilliant experimenters around you? Is that of any use?
Well, it's very stimulating. I mean, I remember in the days shortly before Bose-Einstein condensation, and Carl would come into my office, Carl Wyman, and say, "What is this stuff about the scattering length?" And you know, and I could show him what I knew about it, and then to see that flower and blossom into a whole experimental, tremendous accomplishment and Nobel Prize. It was really exciting to be involved in the early stages of all those discussions. It's a lot of fun, and it nudged me in the direction of cold atoms, where I've been really, it's been one of my main focuses ever since. So it's a two-way street. A beautiful thing about atomic, molecular, and optical physics, that experiment and theory are really closely connected this way. It's one of the truly, most exciting things about this field.
But if you visit those experimental people in their lab, they will usually tell you, oh, it takes 3 to 5 years to set up one of these groundbreaking experiments. Are you sometimes happy that you don't have to deal with the nuts and bolts of all these experimental details?
Well, I'm a strong believer in the Clint Eastwood philosophy of life.
Which is?
A man's got to know his limitations.
Let's skip the limitations. What is currently on your mind? So what are you thinking of, and what projects might you be pursuing? What challenges do you want to tackle while being here in Hamburg?
Well, I've been really interested in pushing the toolkit, like John Bone mentioned, to be able to handle more and more complex situations. This toolkit started even when I was a PhD student and before, but where we could just do what now look like the most trivial of problems were such a struggle. And now we can describe 4 atoms, 5 atoms simultaneously colliding and recombining, and to see where this goes, how to take the few body land into many body land and really understand the linkages, what aspects of a few particles, a few atoms interacting or molecules carry over into the way a chunk of metal behaves, or a superconductor, or a superfluid. This to me is one of the exciting challenges in the field, and we're trying to touch on that with our various methods and build our toolkit.
Would you think that we are soon going to see Rydberg molecules consisting of more than just two atoms?
Well, we already have. Tillman showed some in his talk. Okay. And yeah. We saw some, in fact, in the unpublished thesis work of my student at LSU, Ningyi Du. We were already talking about this possibility, although it seemed so remote, not even having seen the two-atom molecule, that we didn't even publish these ideas at that time. But I think in principle you could, kind of the way Tillman was saying, you could grab molecules or atoms in all the lobes of these wave functions and really move them around, and could be an interesting area to explore.
Thank you very much, Professor Green, for sharing your thoughts and some of your personal insights with us. I'm really confident that your stay in Hamburg will be a win-win situation for all the parties involved. That's what we already heard here. If anybody here would like to know more about Rydberg molecules and the future possibilities for fundamental research they will offer, I can only recommend your prize talk, which is going to be at 4:30, right after reception. But now, after talking so much, it's high time that we give you the prize you came here for. And the Hamburg Prize for Theoretical Physics has been established in 2010 to honor scientists for particularly great achievements in the field of quantum optics and laser physics. And it's going to be awarded by Mrs. Andrea Pauline Martin, who we've already met today, and also by Professor Zengstock. And I'd also like to ask State Secretary Pelikan to join in the field, and maybe you sort out who's going to hand over whatever pieces we have to give to our laureate.
Thank you.
Step in front here.
Congratulations again.
Well, this is a prize money, but first you have to know for what you get it.
So, Dr. Pelikan, please, yeah.
Der Hamburger Preis für theoretische Weltphysik wird verliehen an Professor Chris Green. In Würdigung seiner herausragenden Beiträge auf dem Gebiet der Atom- und Molekülphysik, insbesondere für die Vorhersage neuartiger Rydberg-Moleküle und die Verständnis. Hamburg, den 14.11.2000.
Vielen Dank.
Should I take something for you? Can I help you?
I think
we're all right. Okay, yeah, perfect. Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks so much. Congratulations to Professor Green again from us all. We're very happy. I know that many people here are really looking forward to seeing you back again here in Hamburg rather soon. Believe it or not, we're almost in time. All that's left for me to say now is that there's going to be a reception outside, and you're all more than welcome to join in there and have a little discussion with whoever you like to. But please don't forget to be back in here by 4:30, because that's when Professor Chris Green, our winner, is going to give his prize talk. The laureate's talk is certainly something not to be missed. That's why I hope to see you all back in here by then. Thank you so much for your attention. Take care.